carries in, scores! Patrick Laine snaps it. What a goal by Laine.
Gotta throw this one in the trash and move on. That's not obviously the way you want to start.
Shooting, it's off of Hellebuck. Rebound, it's out of the net. Stopped by Hellebuck. Key saves for Connor Hellebuck.
Johnson scores. Sidney Crosby.
As long as we stick together as a team, we'll be all right.
Stand by highlight. Stand by host. You big boys.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Miles, everyone.
With Drew Mendel, Ezra Ginsberg, and Dave Manute.
And cue the little criminal.
On your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
And for the Winnipeg Jets, I mean, I really like the way they played this year. I know these are two games that haven't been really good ones for them. In fact, they've been real weak ones for them based on how well they played. But they're like your shoes. I like your shoes. Your shoes are really nice, but they need some polishing now and again, and I think that's where the Jets are in terms of their game.
Craig Button, TSN hockey analyst, discussing the Winnipeg Jets. Losers of two in the row on this road trip. Lost in Detroit on Tuesday, lost in Florida, in Miami, in Sunrise on Thursday. They look for redemption tonight in Tampa Bay. Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca and via the iHeartRadio app, we say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We have 3 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday morning. We're fired up here in studio at TSN 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mendel, joined in studio by Dave Manuke and Ezra Ginsberg. Gentlemen, how are your shoes to begin with, going on Craig's analogy? Do they need some shining? Do you even have shoes, or are you just wearing plastic bags over your feet at the moment?
Well, I'm wearing boots right now, and
that's good.
You know, I've needed them because it's been snowing a little bit here in Winnipeg, but, you know, Dave just doesn't wear shoes. He's in his socks right now, like he is every Saturday.
Dave just likes to live a casual lifestyle.
I'm comfortable right now. You know, got the one leg perched under the other. I mean, you got to be comfortable when you do 3 hours of radio.
No slippers or anything? I thought you might have some slippers.
But these are, but my Bob knitted me these socks, so I'm quite comfy.
That's very nice. Some home knitted socks from your Baba. That's always right. It's always very considerate, gentlemen. We start, of course, with the Winnipeg Jets on this Saturday morning. I should make mention you can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can reach us in studio via text. Send your text to 129090. Might read a good tweet, might read a good text. It's all up to me. I have the power in that manner. And, of course, our website that's got the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is illegalcurve.com. We spoke about the Tuesday game, Ezzy, on NHL This Week. On Wednesday, it was a disappointing effort on Tuesday. And then the game on Thursday, a 6-4 loss to the Florida Panthers, was just ugly hockey, I would suggest. Just was not a well-played game by either team. Of course, Florida doesn't care because they get the 2 points, a much-needed 2 points for them. But from the Winnipeg Jets' perspective, you know, Paul Maurice talks about, you know, how the game looks. That is not how they want their game to look. And sort of like they're in the need for sort of a recalibration as we reach the 30 or so game mark of the season.
Yeah, Saturday's game was a teeter-totter. It was up and down, back and forth. And the game was tied in the third period. So the Winnipeg Jets could have easily won this game here. So when you're talking about, you know, what happened in that game, I mean, for me, it was the inability of the Jets' power play to score on that 5-on-3 in the third period and then score later in that third period on the power play. The Panthers, it looked like, were trying to give the Jets every opportunity to win that game. And, you know, we saw, you know, how many difficult saves James Reimer had to make. And Mark Scheifele almost scored there with 15 seconds left before Florida scored in the empty net and finished off the game 6-4. But everybody has to take a deep breath here. I mean, I realize the Jets have lost their last two games here on the road.
Four on the road overall.
Well, and there's no doubt in my mind. I mentioned this on Wednesday's show, Drew, that the Jets are struggling on the road and they're not playing the same way on the road. But they're 2 points behind Nashville right now for the conference lead. So 1 point, actually, 2 points to have the conference lead. So it's not like the Winnipeg Jets season is falling apart here. They could have easily won that game against the Florida Panthers, in my opinion. And even though, you know, you look at that game and the early goals have to be talked about, and it's tough for Eric Comrie. It's only his second NHL start, and he lets in those two goals early, and the Jets are able to tie it up, but they're kind of playing catch-up that entire game. So it was difficult, you know, in that sense that the Jets, it felt like, weren't really dictating the pace of play.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't think necessarily that they had a bad game, because they easily could have got at least 1 point in that game, let alone 2 points, but as a whole, you got to be concerned with how many goals they're giving up. 11 goals in two games, as I mentioned. But, I mean, you have to put that behind you guys, because tonight is going to be arguably the biggest test of the season for the Jets.
Certainly the biggest test of the season thus far. The Tampa Bay Lightning, they lead the NHL with 42 points in 28 games played, atop the Eastern Conference, atop the league as a whole. But, you know, Dave, going back to the road trip, you know, they were flying high after the demolishing of the Ottawa Senators last Sunday, mm-hmm. a game that was over 5 minutes into the second period. And it might have been even over before that. You can argue after the first period. But they go into Detroit, and I guess you can sort of understand the performance in Detroit, or the performance by the Red Wings in Detroit, in that they were coming off being embarrassed by the Montreal Canadiens. They were an angry team. I thought the performance on Thursday night against Florida was arguably more concerning, because they just didn't seem to have any structure to their game. And that's sort of what we hadn't seen from the Jets for the majority of this year, maybe except for the first couple games of the season. They looked like the Jets of old on Thursday, where it was run and gun. You know, the assignments weren't necessarily being picked up like they should have been. It just looked like a very sloppy, maybe disorganized, just no attention to detail like we had seen from the team for the majority of the season.
Yeah, and I think they opened the game probably the way they liked, and James Reimer deserves credit. I thought he played pretty well early on. You know, Andrew Kopp had that chance, the breakaway chance early in the first period, and then, you know, they get burnt. And the first goal, I think, was the redirect off of Hendricks, right, when Pisk took the shot. So I think, to me, you know, that's a tough one for Eric Comrie, and you know, Coach Maurice was asked about it after the game, and he said he probably would have liked to have that one back. And, you know, Eric Comrie himself would probably say he'd like to have at least that one, or the Ekblad, you know, maybe the rebound that Ekblad got and then put it in his own rebound, mm-hmm. that beat him. And those goals are tough, but I mean, like you guys have just touched on, I mean, the fact is that this game was there for the Jets to have. They tie the game on Adam Lowry's goal, which was some nice work by Brandon Tanev, and they never felt like they were out of it. I mean, that was the unusual part, because while it wasn't the cleanest game from the Jets by far, I mean, Florida just wasn't looking very good, and I believe Barkov didn't even play for the third period.
That's right.
So so they lose one of their most dynamic players, and the fact of the matter is that, you know, you said it, with 15 seconds left to go, they could have tied this game. And so you sit there and you think to yourself, like, as badly as you played that game, you know, I don't have the reason as to why they played that game, because they should have been up for it. I mean, you got look, the Detroit game, as you just said, Drew, and I agree, that one's understandable. You have a team just got pumped 10-1. You know that they're going to pay attention to detail. And their gap on Winnipeg was perfect. And they really, like, just – and they played a physical game against the Jets. And I thought Detroit was a really – I just didn't think the Jets were going to have that game. I just thought that was a game Detroit had to win. So, you know, I'm not saying the Jets couldn't have won it, but I wasn't surprised that Detroit did. But then, like I said, to come in 2 days later and you had the day off. It wasn't like you were, like, not – you know, you had some time – to relax in Florida, kind of reset everything and get ready for the next day, and then you're not ready to play that game. You're already down two. You know, you have to come back. You tie it. You take the lead on Blake Wheeler's eighth goal. So to me, that's a game that was there for them to take, and they just didn't put their foot on the necks of the Florida Panthers.
Yeah, and I don't think it's fair, guys, at all, to blame this on Eric Comrie. And I'm not saying that any of us are, but, you know, you mentioned the first goal. Mark Pisick's shot deflects off of Matt Hendricks. So it's a bit of a lucky break for the Panthers. And then the second goal, Aaron Ekblad just absolutely, you know, goes by Kyle Connor, and I believe it was Dmitry Kulikov on defense for the Jets, and picks up his own rebound. So that was just poor defensive coverage.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you're down 2-0 on the road and you had lost the previous game, even though the Jets come back, and we've seen them this year do this both at home and on the road, they've come back down two goals. That's no problem for the Jets. They've been very good at dealing with adversity. But to Dave's point, I think, you know, when Patrick Laine ties that game up in the third period, you know, it's anybody's game, and Michael Haley scores that goal. And again, it was a goal that Eric Comrie would like to have back, but it's one of those games where, you know, it just seemed like the Jets could never get ahead of the game. And I agree with you, Drew. They didn't play well defensively, and I don't think they really played well in any zone of the ice, quite frankly. But I don't think you could say necessarily that, you know, this team has taken a step back. It's two losses. You're going to have that. Good teams lose two games in a row. You just don't want this to become three losses in a row or four losses in a row. That's why tonight's game is so important.
Yeah, the first time since the first two games of the year that the Jets had gone two straight games without at least earning a point. They'd lost two in a row previously, the games in Pittsburgh and then in Columbus,
but they
earned a point in each of those games. So this is the first two-game pointless streak since the beginning of the season for the Winnipeg Jets. And you have Tampa Bay tonight, which, of course, is the most difficult of the three games on this road trip. So the Jets, it's sort of, I found it interesting that yesterday.
Drew, by the way, sorry to interrupt you. This might be the toughest game of the season. I mean, this Tampa Bay Lightning team is for real. Not many teams have beat them this year.
No, we'll talk about the Lightning throughout the show, of course. I'm going to be joined by Brian Engblom at the bottom of the second hour this morning. Brian, of course, a Lightning analyst. We know him when he was a Jets analyst earlier on when the team came back from Atlanta. I found it interesting, though, that yesterday, in terms of their workout, there was an optional on-ice effort, and so some guys were on the ice. Mm-hmm. Those who weren't on the ice did some dry land stuff, off-ice training, and then there was an entire team meeting where they went over a lot of video work for their looking at their defensive play. I think sort of when I said earlier in the segment, asking about sort of needing to recalibrate themselves, I think Paul Maurice and the coaching staff probably acknowledged that, and that's why they did a lot of that video work yesterday to just sort of show, you know, show the players, who I'm sure know this isn't going to come as news to them, but just show them how they maybe got a little bit more sloppy than they had been when it comes to the defensive awareness.
I mean, if you think about it, they scored four goals. I mean, when you score four goals in the National Hockey League, usually you think you're going to win the game.
Yeah.
So clearly, though, when you give up six, of course, one being an empty, the fact is that you can't give up that many goals. Mm-hmm. And so you know that ties into the defensive part of it. And as he said, they gave up five in Detroit. So, you know, you've given up 11 goals in two games, and that's not something this team has been doing this season. So so that's clearly a defensive situation. And we saw some of the breakdowns and some of, you know, even on that first goal, Joel Armia tries to dive to get the puck out of the zone. And we've seen that a bit. Matthew Perreault fled the zone. And that's, I think, something that Coach Maurice was talking about, because you're trying to create offensive opportunities. You think, okay, we've got the puck. Perreault leaves the zone early to try and kind of get into that neutral zone to get himself open. The problem is Jets haven't gotten the puck out of the zone. So those are just those minor tweaks that you just have to be a little bit more cognizant of, I think. And if you can adjust appropriately, because you know Tampa Bay has, as he just said, is probably the most deadly team in the NHL right now.
And Dave, you mentioned how desperate Detroit was on Tuesday night. Florida was desperate as well, guys. Like, you're talking about teams that are trying to keep their seasons alive right now, right? And the Florida Panthers are towards the bottom of the Eastern Conference standings right now. So you could say that, you know, the Jets are a better team than Florida. And I think they are. But Florida is still trying to stay relevant in that playoff race, right, Drew? Mm-hmm. So, I mean,
they play in a weak division. They know that.
It's a weak division. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you knew that they were going to come out with a big effort because they haven't been playing as well as they would have liked. So, I know that this team is going to sweep this aside, though, and not let this linger into tonight's game. But it's going to be a tight test because, as we talked about, Lightning top team in the league right now. And arguably the Stanley Cup favorite. So the Jets are going to have to be a lot sharper, especially in the D zone.
Absolutely. Much more to come on the Jets and the Lightning. But when we come back, we're going to talk about Michael Hutchinson, Bob McKenzie with some interesting tweets on Thursday night. We'll see what the Jets, we'll talk about the Jets or the Moose starting goaltender and see how that ties into the plans for the Winnipeg Jets. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets game day on TSN 1290.
Today, learning that you're the American Hockey League's goalie of the month. What does it mean to you?
Yeah, you know, it's huge. It's definitely first time in my career I've got that honor. And, you know, I'm just glad, you know, the team's playing well in front and they're scoring a bunch of goals and making it kind of easy on me. But, you know, like I said, it's a huge honor to be a goalie of the month.
That's Manitoba Moose goaltender Michael Hutchinson, named the AHL's goaltender of the month in conversation with Moose broadcaster Mitch Peacock. Glad he speaks to Mitch still, because he certainly hasn't spoken to any of the other media throughout the season, which I still find incredible. You know, I know he's upset about being sent down to the Moose from the Jets, but to have not spoken once to the media, even with the tremendous performance he's had this year, is a little bit bizarre to me, Dave.
Yeah, no, that's a fair comment, Drew. I don't really understand it myself, but he clearly has some angst towards the media, and that's his prerogative, I guess. I mean, to me personally, I don't think anybody's going to ask him about his feelings on being sent down. I think, you know, if you make a 40 save shutout performance, and guys are going to ask, you know, guys who are asking questions are professionals. They're not there to get a salacious quote. They're there to find out how you feel you played in a game where you made 40 saves and your team is first in the AHL. So, or, you know, first in your conference and first in your division. So I think it would probably be limited to that, but you know, again, he can choose to do what he wants to do.
Yeah, this segment of the program is brought to you by the Linden Market Dental Center. Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection, as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. To make an appointment to get your teeth to ting, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. You know, Hutchinson's an interesting situation, and Bob McKenzie, you know, sent out some tweets about it on Thursday night, guys, sort of speculating that Michael Hutchinson may be a fit for the Florida Panthers. We know they're going to be without Roberto Luongo for an indeterminate length of time. It certainly looked like it was going to be longer rather than shorter when you watched Luongo go down with the injury earlier in the week. That was, I believe, Monday night against the New York Islanders. And the Panthers supposedly are in the market now for a sort of a veteran goaltender, but not a short-term stopgap goaltender, which led Bob McKenzie to speculate that Michael Hutchinson could be a target of the affections of the Florida Panthers. We've also heard Hutchinson's name in discussions with the Pittsburgh Penguins, with the Edmonton Oilers, as they have their goaltending issues. So it's sort of interesting, though, that the Jets and the Moose just seem to be, I assume they're listening to conversations on Michael Hutchinson, but I guess they have to weigh the decision about, is he more valuable to them as insurance in case they have significant goaltending injuries, or is he more valuable in whatever presumably draft pick he would return in a trade?
Right, and you know, you mentioned earlier, Drew, Michael Hutchinson, AHL goaltender of the month. He's been fantastic this year, splitting the starts with Eric Comrie, Dave, and Eric Comrie's obviously up with the Jets right now, but we expect Steve Mason to be back sooner rather than later, probably in the next week. But with a concussion, you never know. He might be out longer. So especially right now with Eric Comrie up with the Jets, the Manitoba Moose need Michael Hutchinson. And Dave, the Moose are going for their 10th win in a row this afternoon. And you know, you look at Michael Hutchinson, and he obviously didn't have the year that he wanted last year. And mm-hmm. you know, I understand, you know, what you're saying. You know, it's a little bit peculiar that he's not talking to the media, but, you know, that's his decision. So we have to respect that, right? And he has to want to get back into the NHL. He's only 27 years old. People forget, you know, he's got a lot of good hockey in front of him, maybe 10 years at least of good hockey in front of him. And you know that he's disappointed that the Jets brought in Steve Mason, but the reality is that's the nature of the business, right? It's a results-oriented business. He didn't play well. And so what he's done is he hasn't complained. He's played very well for the Manitoba Moose, earning AHL Goaltender of the Month. And regardless of, you know, his desire to want to get back to the NHL with the Jets right now, there's going to be teams looking at really good goaltenders all over the American Hockey League. Andrew Hammond is another guy, right, Dave?
Yep.
That teams are going to look at. He was recently traded, but I believe there was a special agreement with the Colorado Avalanche and Ottawa Senators.
Yeah, I think he's still in Belleville playing for the Senators. He's on loan to the Senators farm team, even though he's property of the Colorado Avalanche.
Right, so NHL teams are going to look at goaltenders, especially veteran goaltenders that have NHL experience. Michael Hutchinson has 99 games of NHL experience, so yeah, we might see the Florida Panthers or the Pittsburgh Penguins, you know, go after a guy like Michael Hutchinson. We don't know right now. As you mentioned, it's all speculation. But, you know, the way he's playing in the American Hockey League right now, Drew, you can make the argument, you know, that he's earned a backup role in the NHL.
You know, certainly playing fantastic hockey in the AHL. And so I was of the opinion that the Jets should probably trade him. You know, this is going back, you know, a few weeks as he's been playing good hockey. I thought the Jets should probably look for what he's worth. And then I sort of got to thinking, you know, what is a AHL goaltender going to net you in return in a trade? I mean, you're talking, I think, best case scenario, maybe a third round pick. Maybe best case scenario, something like that, Michael Hutchinson would get from another team. And then I sort of thought and said, okay, Steve Mason, we just saw that he went down. He goes down with his injury. all due respect to Eric Comrie, I know he didn't have a good game on Thursday. He looked to me like he wasn't ready to be an NHL at the NHL level for any significant length of time. So that if something was to happen to Hellebuck or to Mason, and they were to go down for a longer period of time than we've seen Mason be out for right now, that Comrie really wouldn't be able to help out as a backup goaltender. So then I thought, you know, I think in hindsight, or now, you know, sort of evaluating it, you know, the picture, looking at a more fulsome picture, that Michael Hutchinson's probably more valuable to the Jets as insurance today than he necessarily is in what he'd return in a draft pick. Because how exciting is a fourth-round draft pick, really?
Well, I think it's a couple of things. Number one, if you're a team like the Jets that you are probably in the win-now mode, or at least win this year, get deep into the playoffs, and then think about a Stanley Cup next year, or even maybe thinking of a Stanley Cup this year, then perhaps then you, at the end, of the, as the season winds down, or you know, you get closer to that trade deadline, you think about it, if you can add a piece. To me, you're past adding draft picks, because the fact is you already have a good draft crop. You've got your two, pretty much your entire 2015 draft class right now with the Moose. And I guess I look at it from the perspective of value. And the value to me isn't in trading Michael Hutchinson, it's in riding Michael Hutchinson. Because if you have a situation like you just said, Drew, and Steve Mason goes down or Connor Hellebuck goes down, and you have to call up Eric Comrie for any period of time to back up whomever is going to be the number one guy in Winnipeg, then who's your number one with the Moose? Is it Jamie Phillips, who currently has, I believe, 11 AHL games to his credit? Or is it going to be Michael Hutchinson, who's the number one in goals in save percentage and number two in goals against? So to me, the thought of trading Michael Hutchinson, unless you're getting something significant back. And the reality is you're not trading Michael Hutchinson for a draft piece. One draft pick. You're looking to maybe couple him with something else to get something.
But nobody's giving up that much.
That's
for
my whole point. That's my point, Drew. Is that you're not getting anything of significant value. So why would you do it? Because to me, I think there's such a significant value for these guys: the Jansen Harkins, the Sammy Nikus, the Chase DeLeos, the Jack Roslevics, to be able to go on a deep playoff run potentially with the Manitoba Moose this season. And you're going to do that with a guy like Michael Hutchinson, who, if you guys remember, went to the Calder Cup Finals with the St. John's Ice Caps 3 years ago, or 4 years ago, whatever it is. So the fact is that Michael Hutchinson is a key element to this team, because let's go on the assumption that Eric Comrie goes down. That's not a bad thing. Eric Comrie and Michael Hutchinson as a goalie tandem for your AHL squad.
Comrie clearly needs more work at the AHL level.
You know, look, it's a one-off. I don't think you can just judge Eric Comrie on one game in the NHL.
No,
I mean,
it's not a criticism.
It's a bit of a criticism, and I'm suggesting that if he had 2-3 games like that, then that's maybe more of a body of evidence. I just think like one game is especially, you know, poor circumstances. It is what it is. But the fact of the matter is that Eric Comrie, Michael Hutchinson is your goalie tandem in the AHL. You allow Jamie Phillips to marinate maybe one more season in the ECHL with the Jacksonville Icemen. And then you give your team an opportunity to make a deep Calder run. You give those guys that experience. And look, for example, Syracuse Crunch. We'll talk about it with Brian Engelbaum. They've had two teams go to the finals in the AHL in the last 5 seasons. And now a lot of those guys have graduated and play in the NHL.
The affiliate of the Tampa Bay Lightning.
I simply think it's an important growing aspect of a young group for young prospects, is to allow them to play in the AHL, make a deep playoff run, play some significant hockey. And Michael Hutchinson, in my mind, is key to that.
And not only is it the Moose tandem right now, it's probably the best goalie tandem in the American Hockey League, guys.
Yep, for sure.
Right? Mm-hmm. And the Moose, we know, are a top team in the American Hockey League. So I agree with Dave. I mean, I'm leaning towards the Winnipeg Jets / Manitoba Moose holding on to Michael Hutchinson. And, you know, maybe Michael Hutchinson, again, he would love to have that opportunity to be a backup at the NHL level. But right now, I think he's better suited for the Jets organization to stay with the Moose and be that older mentor to Eric Comrie, split the starts. I would imagine, Dave, they're going to probably split the starts with maybe one goaltender getting slightly more starts, but I don't think you're going to see one of the two goalies get 80% of the starts like that.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with that. So even though, you know, there are some teams that are pretty desperate, guys, and let's not mistake it Florida's desperate. Pittsburgh's desperate. Right now, you know, Pittsburgh's
Edmonton's
in a bad situation.
Desperate.
Edmonton's in a bad situation. Laurent Brossoit has not played very well, mm-hmm. and they don't have a capable backup right now. So, I mean, there are teams that I imagine are calling the Jets. Again, we don't know. So I can't sit here and say that, you know, Chevy's phone is ringing off the hook, even though phones don't ring off the hook anymore. But, you know, and that's a testament to Michael Hutchinson. Again, going back to Hutchinson, Dave, I mean, he had a disappointing year last year, mm-hmm. and the Jets had a disappointing year. It wasn't just Hutch. So, for Michael Hutchinson, he's had a great year,
yeah.
put up some great numbers in the Manitoba Moose, and I wouldn't be surprised if he doesn't get traded, he does get signed by another NHL team, and he could be in the NHL next year.
That's what I was going to say, just to wrap up the segment, is if he continues at this pace, even at the AHL level, he's probably earned himself a backup. He's an unrestricted free agent at season's end. He's probably earned himself a backup job in the NHL next year. So, you know, as disappointed as he might be in not being an NHL goalie right now, and as disappointed as he might be in not necessarily being traded to get back to the NHL, keep it up at this rate with these numbers, he's going to be an NHL backup next season.
Potentially. And that's exactly what you have to do. I mean, look, the Jets and the Moose, the Moose and the Marlies really have the two best goalie tandems in the AHL. Yeah. And if you're the Moose organization looking at a team that you, like I said, you think is a Calder team potentially, you don't mess with it. You just keep it rolling.
Yeah, in Toronto, it's Calvin
Sparks
Pickard and Garrett Sparks. Yeah.
Garrett Sparks.
Anyways, we'll keep an eye on the Michael Hutchinson situation. If any news breaks on that front, we'll, of course, let you know. When we come back, Jason Bell of the Winnipeg Free Press is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290. Saturday morning on TSN 1290, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. We want to hear from your tweets. If you send us a good tweet, we'll maybe read it on air. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome to the program Jason Bell of the Winnipeg Free Press. Jason, we know that you're in a time crunch, but we appreciate you joining us this morning.
No, we're good. We got lots of time. We're good to go.
Attaboy. Thanks, Jason. Obviously, Jason, the stiffest of the three tests on the road trip comes tonight in Tampa Bay. It's undoubtedly been a disappointing road trip for the Jets, losers of the game in Detroit on Tuesday and then Thursday night in Florida. You know, we were talking about it earlier on the program, Jason, and that game in Sunrise on Thursday was sort of just undisciplined, ugly hockey, sort of reminiscent of past years, or what you hope to be past years Winnipeg Jets. Is that the consensus in and around the team? It's just that's not how they want their game to look?
Well, I got to take exception to what you're saying here, because I'm looking at this Tampa Bay game notes here, and they don't look that impressive to me. They've only got 20 wins. They've only got a goaltender that's got 18 of those wins and a 9.32 save percentage. Apparently they got two guys with 40 points. I've never heard of those two guys, but this is formidable stuff for these Winnipeg Jets coming off of two games that, would be classed as less than classics. I didn't like the way they played in Detroit, and I liked their game even less in Sunrise 48 hours later. You're right in some respects. It was kind of like the bad old days where the Winnipeg Jets got down early and then chased a hockey game. And that meant taking some penalties initially, scoring, but then allowing quick goals right after, you know, chasing towards the end of the game, having to pull their goaltender, empty netter, end of the evening. And Winnipeg Jets fans are pretty familiar with that script.
Jason, do you think...
I've seen that script for a month or two, so that's why I think... the sky is falling scenario all of a sudden. But keep in mind, as I look at these game notes on the other side, there's a hockey club that's 17-8-4. They got 38 points. They're still second or third in the division, you know, and then you put two or three wins together and all of a sudden you're leading the division and you're right at the top of the conference. You got a goaltender who's going tonight who's got 15 wins and a 2.44 goals against and a 9.21 save percentage. And you got two of the best forwards in the National Hockey League who arguably were not their best forwards on the road trip so far, but you can expect they'll be fairly motivated against the upper echelon Tampa Bay Lightning tonight.
Jason, you just mentioned Connor Hellebuck. Do you think he's going to have a chip on his shoulder tonight against the Tampa Bay Lightning, trying to erase Tuesday night's game against the Detroit Red Wings and his unhappiness with the way he played?
He always talks about these redemption games, doesn't he? That's his word, not ours. And he's been pretty darn good about leaving the odd poor effort behind this season. He's come back strong after. And, you know, the one thing about Connor Hellebuck, he is an incredibly difficult cat to read because he plays kind of mind games with us. He kind of play mind games with himself sometimes. Who can forget the "I like my game" quote last year after I think he let five or six in and was pulled? So, you know, it's interesting. But, I mean, he's lost games and come back with victories a couple of times this season. I expect that Connor Hellebuyck is going to have a very, very sound game tonight. And helping him along will be, you know, you would have to believe a much tighter defensive effort than what the Winnipeg Jets displayed the previous two games on this road trip when they did revert back to some ugly habits. I think there was a sense, and Brian Little said it so eloquently yesterday, that there was a sense that the goals were coming so easy over the course of the last month or so that it was easy to stray from some of the good habits and let some of the bad habits creep in. And they got a real boot to the teeth this week on how you have to maintain a certain strategy to win in this league.
Jason, there's been lots of questions about Tucker Pullman these days, who has spent the time since his recall up in the press box. Many, including Coach Maurice, have spoke about the need for him to play. His last game for the Jets was October 17th, and his last game for the Moose was November 17th. Do you anticipate him being sent back to the Moose soon, or do you expect him to get into a Jets game?
You know, I kind of thought we might have seen him in a Detroit or in Florida. I certainly wasn't going to see him play tonight, and then they do go home for a bit of time. So, you know, Paul is saying that he'd like to see him in a game, whether that be here or with the Manitoba Moose. I mean, they come home, they play Vancouver, maybe we see him slide into that game. But this is where I'm not the expert, and we're not the experts, because how do you define what's best for a young player? I mean, is he getting more out of being a bona fide NHL defenseman, albeit the number seven, and being around the hockey club and practicing hard and then getting into that routine? Or does he get more out of playing at the American Hockey League level? I would argue that when you've got a Julian Melchiori or somebody that could, you know, and this is nothing to take away from Julian Melchiori, but a guy that might be better suited for an NHL press box than Tucker Pullman, you have young Tucker playing with the Manitoba Moose. And it's a bit trial by fire down there, and he maybe flexes his offensive muscle a little more than he has when he has made appearances with the Jets. And that's how you develop a young player. But, you know, it remains to be seen how they move forward with that. But there's no doubt, Paul Maurice said, this kid's got to get in some game action.
Jason Bell is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Jason's in Tampa for the Jets and the Lightning tonight. Jason, you wrote about him in today's Winnipeg Free Press. That's Tyler Myers. After having such a down year last year, we know the injury and pretty much a lost season. What's it like from Tyler Myers' perspective to have this bounce back season where he's arguably playing at his highest level since his Calder Trophy winning season, back in 2009-10 with the Buffalo Sabres?
Well, you know, we are sort of impartial observers, aren't we, guys? But it's hard not to pull for Tyler Myers for a couple of reasons. Obviously, what he and his wife went through last year with their child is something that no parent would want themselves nor others to go through. Mm-hmm. So when you see him mention very just briefly that, you know, things are good in that regard, and he's all grins, then you know that, you know, wow, that's first and foremost. So you're real pleased on that front. Then you move to the hockey side, and the guy that, you know, went through a lot last year with the hip problem, which then turned into the groin problem. And then he was finally shut down. And were there lingering doubts on his ability to come back? He says he didn't have any, but, you know, you wonder. Because certainly in Buffalo, his place had slipped. His production had slipped. His performance had slipped, albeit probably be trying to do way too much on a very, very poor Sabres hockey club. And you know, a change of scenery was what he desired, or what he needed. He didn't desire, he didn't ask for that trade. It came as a bit of a shock to him, but he said it was a new lease on life. And he's really treating this season as a new lease on life. He's played all 29 games for the Winnipeg Jets. He's chipped in offensively. He's been pretty sound defensively, although he would be the first to admit that he didn't play particularly well the other night in Detroit and wasn't a whole lot better the two nights later. But there weren't very many of them that were very good those two nights, so you let him off the hook. But, you know, he is a darn good right-side defenseman with size that you can't teach and reach that you can't teach, and he's got hard hockey smarts. I mean, Dmitry Kulikov has played with quite a few guys over the years, and he was raving about the kind of player that Tyler Myers is and his smarts on the ice and how the two have really clicked quite quickly. They're about the same age. They kind of came into the league around the same time, and it's been a real darn good pairing, I think, for the Winnipeg Jets. They need a better effort from them tonight, obviously, and everybody, but as I say, it's tough not to be pretty happy with you know, Tyler Myers' lot in life right now.
Jason, after saying that he was struggling with his confidence for the second time this season, Patrick Laine's got 4 goals and 8 points in his last 4 games. Is this the best hockey that we've ever seen Laine play for the Jets?
I would suggest no, only because it's come at a time when the club has lost 2 in a row, and he would be the first to discount any individual points he's garnered when the points for the team don't come. And I don't think those are just lip service from him. Patrick likes to accumulate points. But I think the Laine that we're coming to understand as an athlete, he likes winning a whole lot more. And so when the club's not winning, I think the points are pretty hollow. And, you know, he's been pretty good. I think we saw a much flashier Patrick Laine last year. But, I mean, it's a bit of a different team dynamic, right? I mean, they're rolling lines a little bit different. The power play setup obviously is different. He's not always the main trigger man on the power play like he was last year. I don't know if we've seen him necessarily fly through the neutral zone carrying the puck, and there hasn't been as many odd man rushes that he's been involved in that maybe we saw last year. I'm not going to denigrate what kind of a season he's had. I mean, he's been very, very good. I mean, he's got 25 points. He's got his 15 goals. You know, so what does that mean? I mean, he's probably on pace for 40, if and he could certainly pick up that pace. So that's a long answer to say that I've liked his game certainly over the course of the last week to 10 days. He's going to have to continue to work on that consistency where he doesn't disappear for 3 or 4 and then get into a media scrum and say that I suck and I have to play better. I mean, I think he's just got to play better all the time if he wants to be one of these next great ones.
Jason, Steve Mason has joined the players during practice on the ice. I'm not sure if he's taken shots during those practices, but I know he's joined kind of midway through. Is he any closer to return? And do you think Eric Comrie sees the net again before being returned to the Moose?
Yeah, and you know, I'll get a better sense, I think, of that. I think today, maybe. And we didn't see Steve yesterday. He was at the practice rink while we were we kind of joined up with off-ice players yesterday at the downtown rink. But I know Steve was practicing way out there yesterday and presumably was taking some shots because that was the next step, right, was to take some blasts. And, you know, he had Ehlers and he had Laine skating with him yesterday, and I think Woody was out there with him coaching, and I think they probably instructed them to take some shots on him. I think he's pretty close, I would have to anticipate. And, no, I don't see Eric Comrie playing again, and that's not because of any kind of a slip that he demonstrated the other night in Sunrise. I just think that their goaltenders are Connor Hellebuyck and Steve Mason, and when Steve's ready, he'll come back and play. And I think the timing is such that Connor Hellebuyck will play tonight. He'll go home. He'll play against Vancouver. And all of a sudden, there were 12th, 13th of December. And I think that's probably right when Steve Mussel is ready to come back.
Jason Bell is with the Winnipeg Jets in Tampa. You can read coverage of his gamer for the Jets Lightning game later on tonight and tomorrow at winnipegfreepress.com. Jason, appreciate your time this morning. Thanks for joining us.
Always fun, guys. Thanks. You guys enjoy your day.
Thanks, Jason. Take care. When we come back, we talk about the Winnipeg Jets defense. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290. Ten minutes before the top of the hour, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. This segment of the show brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com.
Drew, we have to give a quick shout-out
to
our good friend Mike McIntyre of the Winnipeg Free Press. He texted me and said that he's listening to the show on his way to Killarney, and also have to give a shout-out to his son Parker, who plays for West Kildonan Collegiate, and he's in a tournament today, so best of luck to Parker McIntyre.
Well, shout-out to Parker, and thanks to Mike and Parker for listening. And
more importantly, is Mike going to be at today's Moose game? That's what I need to know.
Yeah, Dave, that's you guys have your quality bonding time at the Moose games together.
Today's a teddy bear toss, too. I mean, so
are you bringing a teddy bear?
I don't know if I'm allowed to throw one from the press box. That'd be interesting. But
yeah, you might hit somebody. That would probably work poorly.
Well, I don't know if it'd be any different than throwing from the second deck, but from the upper deck. But you know, I mean, I'll see if I'll ask Daniel Fink, who's the communications director for the Moose. I'll see if I'm allowed to bring some sort of teddy bear up there.
It's nice that you got to support the. It goes for a good cause and everything. The teddy bear toss always a good thing.
Yeah,
so
they've got back to back excitement. Teddy bear and then tomorrow Star Wars.
Oh, are you big? Because isn't the new Star Wars movie coming out soon?
Sure, I'm not.
I'm not a Star Wars guy.
December 15th.
Oh, you have your tickets already, do you?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, there you go. Winnipeg Jets defense. Josh Morrissey, Jacob Trouba have become, by default, by design, sort of the number one defensive shutdown
pair. It's definitely not by default.
No, it's by design. You're right. I should not have used the word default there. Paul Maurice spoke about the performance of Morrissey and of Trouba earlier in the week. Here's what Jets head coach Paul Maurice had to say about them.
Well, you look at Jacob Trouba's role and playing shutdown, kind of a shutdown pair for you guys. Is that, how much of that is a reflection of kind of the roster you have or his skill set? Like, is that something ultimately you see him as an NHL player?
It wouldn't, it's not a limiting role, right? So shutdown usually means a real big chunk of minutes. So he and, you know, the two youngest guys we have on our blue line play that, do that job. He's been on and off the power play, and he's off it now just because the unit that Tyler Myers goes out with, both of them got really hot, and he's a power play guy, and he killed penalties. So Jake's a real all-around defenseman. He can play against the other team's best, and there was a bit of an adjustment early this year, I think, with that. You know, there's very little room for error with those guys, and then he and Josh have really rounded into a really strong pair. But he's got a big offensive game, too. He's just, like each player here, we've asked a little bit of sacrifice for their style of play to help us try to win hockey games. So he's toned it down a bit, but he's got a big offensive upside.
That's Paul Maurice on Jacob Trouba. Him and Josh Morrissey combined to be the Jets' sort of number. Would you say they're the number one pair?
Yeah.
Would you call them the top pair? The top pair of Jets defense?
Yeah, I think so. For sure.
Yeah. You know, how do you think they are suited in that shutdown role? You know, have you been, are you okay sort of, I mean, the Jets obviously, both these guys are RFAs at season's end. I think the Jets obviously have long-term hopes that they would both be long-term members of this team. Going forward, if this is your number one defense pair for the next 3 years, 5 years, 7 years, is that something that you think the Jets are comfortable with, that they're in good hands with, if this is the duo that they put out against the opponent's top forward groups on a night-in, night-out basis?
This could be their top pair for the next 10 years, Drew. Josh Morrissey's 22, and Jacob Trouba's 23, turning 24. So it's an excellent shutdown pair, and I think there's no doubt that this is the top D pair for the Jets. They didn't have a particularly great game against the Florida Panthers on Thursday night, but I mean, guys, these guys can skate. They can move the puck. They're physical. I mean, I would take this pair and put it up against most pairs in the National Hockey League. I'm not saying it's the best pair, but you can make an argument it's a top 10 pair in the NHL. And just look at the numbers for the Winnipeg Jets this year, guys. I mean, the numbers are down as far as goals against. The team defense is much better. And the fact is, Dave, Morrissey and Trouba go against the team's top line most nights, right? So tonight you're going to go up against Steven Stamkos, Nikita Kucherov, and Vladislav Namestnikov. Not just the top line for the Tampa Bay Lightning, but in my opinion, the best line in the NHL.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Blake Wheeler, Mark Scheifele, and Kyle Connor are not that far behind this line. But, I mean, these guys can score goals in bunches, Dave. So I think Trouba and Morrissey, I mean, what I like about both of these guys is they're smart defensemen. They know where to be on the ice. And I realize that, you know, Jacob Trouba's numbers might be a little bit down. But, I mean, he's a 30-point defenseman, in my opinion. I don't think Jacob Trouba... That's, again, just my opinion. Maybe you put him in a different type of role. Maybe he gets up to 40 points, but I don't think he's a 50-point defenseman. And if you look at his numbers, he's probably on pace for around 30 points, right, Dave? Maybe a little bit less. So maybe, you know, because he's taken on a little bit more of a shutdown role this year and his power play minutes are a little bit down, you know, his offensive numbers have struggled. But Josh Morrissey is a quintessential shutdown defenseman that they've needed on that left side. I think he's been the Jets' best overall defenseman. I think Morrissey and Myers have been the Jets' two best defensemen. So I think, you know, they're going to keep this pair together for, I think, the rest of the year.
Yeah, I mean, I think Josh Morrissey's continued to blossom, especially considering that, you know, just a few years ago he was considered a bust, which is funny now when you watch the way he plays. And, you know, he's like an Enstrom in terms of his hockey smarts and the way he uses his stick to knock the puck off of guys away from other guys and just, you know, negate good chances for, you know, I'm thinking of one when Bukestad came into the Jet zone, he had a bit of speed and Morrissey kept him to the outside and knocked the puck off of, and prevented a good opportunity for the Panthers. So, you know, there's so many little things in games, and it's funny because Morrissey's smaller in stature, people say are surprised when he's physical, but the irony to me is if you've watched Josh Morrissey at any level, he's always been a physical player, and so I'm not surprised that he's continued that into the NHL. So no, I agree with you, as I think this, if you're Kevin Cheveldayoff in the Jets organization, you're hoping this is your top pairing for a long, long time.
Of course, it'll be interesting to see what happens with Trouba this offseason. Mm-hmm. He's the RFA. I mean, anytime you make a trade demand, that's always lingering. But Elliot Friedman sort of spoke about it a couple weeks ago, saying that from what everything he's heard, as long as Trouba's playing the right side, which is where he's been for the predominance of the last two seasons, mm-hmm. he's happy. So we'll see if that translates into a contract extension or a significant contract extension with the Winnipeg Jets this offseason, see if there's actually, if his happiness translates into a long-term extension. On the Tucker Poolman front, we were talking to Jason Bell last segment. Poolman hasn't played for the Jets since being recalled from the Manitoba Moose when Toby Enstrom went down with his injury. Here's what Paul Maurice had to say about Tucker Poolman recently.
Right. We'd like him to get into as many pro games as we can. We're, you know, the concern of injury, he is clearly the next guy in. And we'll have to weigh that. There'll come a watershed point here if we stay healthy on our back. And the fact that he's a righty makes a difference. He played his offside. He was fine. His last game in was offside. And it wasn't great. We want to put a younger player in his natural position to give him a chance to move well, play well. But he's in a bit of a tough spot right now. And because of the righties that we do have, we probably won't let him sit there too much longer.
Is it time for Tucker Poolman to either be sent back down to the Moose to get into game action, given that there's no opening on the right side right now in the Jets' defense, and maybe call up a guy, Dave, you were mentioning off-air, I believe, a guy like Julian Melchiori, who, sure, he'd like to play, but I'm sure he'd be just as happy to receive an NHL paycheck to sit in the press box.
Yeah, and Jason Bell mentioned Julian Melchiori as well. I think he's got to play games, Drew, doesn't he? I mean, this is his first professional year after finishing his career with the University of North Dakota, and he hasn't played a pro game since mid-November. So it's over 3 weeks since Tucker Poolman played last with the Manitoba Moose. He hasn't played a game for the Jets since the end of October, I believe.
Yeah, October 17th, I think.
And yep. Paul Maurice said it. I mean, the Jets have Tyler Myers, Dustin Byfuglien, and Jacob Trouba on the right side, and the Jets would prefer Tucker Poolman to be playing on the right side. And what I found interesting about that clip is that Paul Maurice said the last time that Poolman played on his left side, it wasn't a good game for him, even though
he's
can play the left side.
Professional rookie. It's not altogether surprising.
I'm not taking anything away from Tucker Poolman, but Maurice was being brutally honest there. He's saying we prefer Poolman on the right side, Dave. So unless there's an injury on the right side, he's not going to play right now, and I think that's a problem.
Yeah, and I think that if you want to play Tucker Poolman on the left side, you want to get him used to playing on that left side, perhaps to replace Tobias Enstrom next year or whatever, or someone who goes down with injury potentially, then the fact of the matter is, and you have to be doing that in the minors and giving him the opportunity to play all those minutes and play on the left side and make mistakes with the Moose where it's less costly for the parent organization. So to my mind, Tucker Poolman needs to be in the AHL because, again, it's one of those things like with Jack Roslovic. It's like any of these players. You're not just playing them in 5-on-5 and they're getting 17 minutes a game. They're playing in all facets of the game. They play PK. They play power play. They play in all dimensions for the team, and they play big roles and big minutes. So the fact is, Tucker Poolman, although he's played on the right side for the Manitoba Moose when he's been there, the truth is that he should be there. He should be there playing, 18 to 20 minutes a game for Manitoba and developing with that young core that they've got with the Moose. At least that's to my mind. So
when we come back, Michael Trakos of Post Media is going to join us. We'll talk about the goings-on around the NHL. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on TSN 1290. Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Send in your tweets. I might read them on air. You can send in your text messages as well. Send your text to 129090. Standard messaging rates may apply, do apply, in fact. I also might read those on air, too. On our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio, that's IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From Post Media, from the National Post, we're pleased to welcome back to the program our very good friend, Michael Trakos. Michael, good morning. How are you?
Hey, pretty good, guys.
That's good.
We're in for a treat tonight with the hockey schedule lining up the way it is.
Yeah, should be a fun night. Do you have any plans? Or are you just going to kick your feet up and want to catch some of the games?
Yeah, you know what? I'm going to be covering World Juniors at camp starting next week, so they gave me the weekend, basically. I would have loved to be in Pittsburgh to cover Penguins versus Leafs, but you know what? Being at home, I'm going to probably sit in front of two different TVs and have Jets Lightning on one and Pens Leafs on the other and just enjoy myself here.
That sounds like a lovely way to spend your evening. I'm not sure what your wife will think about that, but that's a separate issue for you to deal with altogether.
There you go. Stick handle around that.
That's right. Michael, is there any truth to the rumor that Matthew Tkachuk learned his spearing technique from what you used to do to James Myrtle?
Possibly. And if it's anything like that, then I don't think it's going to leave his game anytime soon because it's still going on with me and Myrtle. But, yeah, it's funny. You know what? I love the fact that Matthew Tkachuk plays on the edge. I think we need more of those kind of players. I don't necessarily think we need the Matt Cooks, but I love the fact that guys like Marchand and Tkachuk are some of the more skilled players in this league, but also the more feistier ones. And, Toronto's got one in Nazem Kadri as well, who's having a terrific season once again and still is a huge thorn in the side of most opponents. So, obviously you don't want to see him spearing guys, but the fact that he's basically the NHL's heel straight out of, like, WWE wrestling, I think that's kind of just as good for the league as a guy like PK Subban is. I think it kind of adds a little juice to the proceedings there.
Mike, I warned you that I was going to ask you about Austin Matthews, and I realize there's been lots of discussion in Toronto about his one goal in the last eight games, but is this just Toronto Maple Leafs fans getting a little bit maybe paranoid or concerned because of the fact that he scored 40 goals in his rookie year?
Yeah, and Austin's looked good. I know, some people have said, he hasn't been as dominant or as he was prior to kind of missing some time. It would have been, in mid-November when he, I think he missed four games. Since coming back, he's had a couple goals here and there, but people have said he hasn't looked as dominant. I think a lot of it is a reflection on his line mates. Right now, Zach Hyman has no finishing touch around the net, and whether it's a William Nylander or a Connor Brown, the Leafs haven't found that really perfect fit on his right side. So, you know, it's not rocket science, guys. Like, you go around the league, whether it's Stamkos, Kucherov, whether it's Wheeler, Shifley, or Ehlers and Line A, like, it takes two to really make a line go. And really, Austin Matthews is kind of going at this alone because he's not getting that support, whether it's Hyman, whether it's Nylander, whether it's Brown, whether it's Marner at times. So I think Mike Babcock is really challenged here and trying to find him a running mate. And until he does, you're probably going to see this sort of, I don't want to say mediocre production, but definitely not the production that we saw last year where him and Nylander were connecting on a nightly basis.
Yeah, Mike, 26 points in 25 games. He's slacking this year.
That's the thing. Like, when you raise the bar for yourself, well, let's be honest. Guys were on top of Line A in the first month of the season, and I was about to write a story on that. I was like, oh, yeah, here comes the slumping Line A, because he was, you know, remember, he was really hard on himself in the post-game and in the Jets, and then you look at his stats and you're going, oh, he's actually on pace for what he did last year. It's just amazing. Like, these young guys, they really do raise the bar for themselves. And, yeah, like you said, Matthews is not having a poor season by anyone's imagination, but when you look at what he did last year and what he's done this year, yeah, you probably do expect more.
You know, Mike, don't – Ezzy and I well understand what it's like to have a dynamic duo and then struggling with your third in Drew.
Yeah, Drew, you're Zach Hyman.
But Mike, with the NHL basking in the success of Vegas, it looks like they're forging ahead with the apparent announcement of a Seattle franchise. Are you surprised by how quickly this is happening, and are you surprised also that it is Seattle?
No, not on both fronts, no. Like, if you remember during that application process, Gary Bettman could not hide his dissatisfaction that it was Vegas and Quebec City, but Seattle had not tendered an application at that time. And they were really ready to kind of give Seattle a franchise and have two teams join at once at that time. And the only problem was the ownership couldn't get the arena deal together. So it's taken this long, but really this has been in the works kind of behind the scenes for forever. And yeah, as soon as that arena is retrofitted for NHL NBA use, which looks like it's going to be in time for the 2020-21 season, this team is happening. And, you know, it's funny. Like, I talked to a number of folks yesterday and today for an upcoming story just on what that flavor looks like in Seattle, what the hockey scene looks like. And you remember, like, I think there's, what, like four junior teams in the Washington area alone, and downtown Seattle, I think, is about 20 miles away from the Everett Silvertips as well as the Seattle Thunderbirds. So there is a kind of a flourishing junior scene there. But talk to some people in the town, and it's like, this is not a hockey market where a lot of people actually play hockey. There's not a lot of community rinks, and it's not really thought of as a hockey-first community. So they do have challenges. It's not quite Las Vegas where you're plucking a team down in the desert where hockey just isn't fathomable, but it's also not Minnesota. It's not Boston. It's not like some places where a lot of hockey gets played. So there are going to be some challenges there. But I think it's going to be exciting too. Like, I don't know if you guys have ever been to Seattle, but it is a fun city to be in. And I think the NHL is wise to kind of take it there. Granted, I'd love to see it back in Canada, but it doesn't look like that's on the horizon.
Michael Trakos is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Michael is the national hockey writer for Post Media. You can also read his work at nationalpost.com. Michael, when the Oilers win the draft lottery and draft Rasmus Dahlin, will that be the key to turning around the franchise?
Yeah, well, they might have to wait another couple of years and get another guy, like whether it's Jack Hughes or someone else too. But yeah, I feel bad for Edmonton in the sense that, you know, like, how do you be a fan here where every year you're basically in the draft lottery? I don't get it. But, you know, I don't know how you guys feel. Do you think that they're going to actually finish near the bottom, or are they going to make a run of it and just basically be a bubble team? I kind of think it's going to be the latter. I think that there's too much talent there on paper, and I think Cam Talbot, once he gets back, he's going to get his game in order. And I don't know if it's going to be quite Carey Price returning to Montreal, but I can't believe that Edmonton's going to be at the bottom of the standings when everything is said and done.
Mike, what's your explanation for why Brent Burns, Erik Karlsson, and Dustin Byfuglien have a combined 2 goals?
I have no idea, to be honest. And I have no idea how the Buffalo defense hasn't scored a goal. Everything is kind of mind-boggling. With Karlsson, fine, he's not a shooter. He's going to be setting up guys more than he is. Going to be the trigger guy. But Burns is actually shooting the puck. Last time I checked, I thought he was on pace for even more shots than he was a year ago. So his just comes down to just bad luck. I don't know what Byfuglien's case is there either, but it's just a funny year. And, you know, I was talking to Mark Giordano from Calgary the other day, and he said that, you know what, like more defensemen now are shooting the puck, but they're shooting for the end boards and shooting for more like slap passes or shooting for deflections rather than just taking a shot. And I think that's a reflection of most teams now are defending right in front of the net and allowing the shots from the side. So it could just be that, like, everything that these guys are shooting are hidden shin pads and just not making its way through. So, they're going to have to find ways to kind of generate offense. But it is kind of surprising with Burns, at least. Like, he had 29 goals last year and really is a perennial 20-goal scorer from the back end. And for him to have 1 goal this year, it is a bit mind-boggling.
Sorry, Mike, those three defensemen actually have a combined 3 goals. Brent Burns scored his second the other night.
Oh, well, there you go. Change everything I said because of the apparently.
You know, Mike, folks here in Winnipeg can certainly empathize with those in Quebec City. While I realize the balance of teams in the East-West could be part of the reason why Quebec City lost out, do you think there's any hope the 18,259-seat Videotron Center will see an NHL team playing there in the regular season?
No. I don't know where it's coming from because it's either going to be Arizona relocates or Florida relocates. We know that Carolina, if they end up going anywhere, it's going to be to Texas now with the ownership change. And that's not going to happen for 7 years, apparently, because that's what the assurance was, that they can't move for that long. But really, you're looking at, like, Calgary, I doubt, is going to move to Quebec City. I think that's eventually, that's just a pressure point where they're eventually going to get an arena. But, yeah, you're basically waiting for, like I said, Florida or in Arizona. And, you know, the longer this goes, that new Videotron arena or center is going to get older and older. And you know, it's going to be funny. Like, I by the time Quebec City actually gets a rink, it's going to be like, okay, well, now you need a new rink because that thing's 20, 25 years old and one of the older buildings now in the NHL. So, yeah, I feel bad for Quebec City. Like, you apply for it, you've got a ready-made rink, you know that it's going to be successful based on that hockey community there in Quebec City. And, you know, for sports writers, I think we're at a loss because we just love visiting Montreal and Quebec. And it really is kind of unfortunate that you're not going to see that battle of the Nordiques and the Canadians again anytime soon.
Michael Trakos from Post Media is our guest on the Legal Curve Hockey Show. Michael, are we going to see a season where there's no in-season coaching changes? We know that sort of, you know, Dave Hakstol was on the hot seat in Philly and they've won a couple games in a row now. And, you know, maybe Jeff Blashill in Detroit is on the hot seat, but they're sort of, you know, meandering through the terrible Atlantic Division. Is this going to be a year with no in-season coaching changes?
Yeah, quite possibly. And it's funny because we saw so many last year, and I think there were so many significant ones last year that it almost seems like the ones that you would say, okay, well, they're primed for a coaching change. Well, like, you're not going to, like, Montreal, I guess, was a talk maybe a month ago that they were primed for some sort of change. Well, you're not going to change the coach 2 years in a row. And I don't know. I don't see Detroit going to changing coaches, just knowing how Ken Holland operates. Like, they're going to give Blashill as much rope as he needs based on what we've seen in the past with other coaches. And yeah, I don't know where it's going to come from. Arizona is fairly new under their head coach. The only one I could see possibly is Todd McLellan, and yet you change him out of Edmonton, and where do you go from there? Like, this guy's a really good coach. It's just a matter of, I don't know if they have the right pieces in place. So it will be kind of something to watch on. I don't see them really kind of changing course again. And same thing with Buffalo, where you've got Phil Housley there. It's his first season, so you're not going to remove him out of that coaching position as well.
Last one for you, Michael. The Blackhawks and the Ducks are each have 31 points. They're both out of the playoffs as things currently stand. Which of the two perennial Western Conference favorites, finalists, do you expect to turn things around the quickest?
I think both are in the playoffs at the end of the day.
Okay.
In terms of who's going to get there quicker, I don't know.
Sure.
But I think both are getting in there. I think Vancouver is very susceptible, and I don't know. I keep saying Vegas is going to come down to earth sooner rather than later. They're second in the Pacific, but don't be surprised if they're out of the playoffs when all is said and done.
Michael Trakos covers the NHL for Post Media. You can read his work at nationalpost.com. Michael, always appreciate you having you on. Enjoy your relaxing night of hockey coverage tonight.
Thanks very much, guys. Enjoy it as well.
Take care, Michael.
Thanks a lot, Mike.
When we come back, we preview tonight's Jets-Lightning game. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on TSN 1290.
Stamkos ahead to Kucherov. He's in on quick alone. He fakes. He scores! What a turn of events! Great save by Budaj, followed by the breakaway goal by Kucherov, number 16, and the Lightning have a 1-0 lead. But here comes Kucherov into the zone again, beating it out of Killorn. To Stamkos, he scores! The onslaught continues, a fourth goal for the Lightning here in the first 11 and a half minutes. 4-0 Tampa Bay.
Two guys the Jets are going to have to be very aware of. Steven Stamkos, Nikita Kucherov, the catalyst to the success of the Tampa Bay Lightning. Stamkos, 41 points. Kucherov with 40 points. A dynamic duo, if there ever was one. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. This segment of the show brought to you by our good friends at Keener Jerseys. Over the past 20 years, Keener Jerseys has established itself as one of the best jersey customizers in the world, specializing in customization services and branded team apparel. Keener Jerseys is changing the game with world-class craftsmanship and unparalleled service. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want customized, visit KeenerJerseys.com or their showroom at 982 Portage Avenue.
I was texting with Jason from Keener Jerseys this week, making some plans to get together over the holidays for a little bevy.
Have a little bevy or two, and, you know, crack open a couple cold ones.
As he doesn't keep belief singular. Come on.
I said a couple cold ones. You know, he's got to be, he's a responsible member of society, so it won't be few cold ones. It'll just be a couple cold ones. Yeah, so you guys all, it's always the nice time to get together with friends and, you know, celebrate the holiday season. Of course, I don't hope not to see you guys besides the Saturday
morning
show.
This is the last show.
This is it. We're just pulling the plug afterwards, you know, go our separate ways, that sort of thing. The Jets and the Lightning tonight from the Amalie Arena, 6 p.m. puck drop game you can hear live on TSN 1290. Jets probably had it circled on their calendar.
What is Amalie, by the way?
It's an oil company.
Okay.
Amalie Oil. It's not named after Amalie Benjamin, the NHL.com writer, although she did write an article once about Amalie Benjamin going to the Amalie Arena.
What's the price of a barrel right now, Drew?
I don't know, Ezzy. I don't have my oil. My oil reserves are not nearly what they should be, unfortunately.
I have a question. Do you still have a calendar that you circle?
No. Some people still have day timers, though. I do have an I have a Google calendar that
I'm not so sure that's a term many people
Naomi use. And I have a physical calendar that we write our appointments on. And
a mutual calendar. It's getting serious.
Do you have a mutual checking account, mutual bank account, that sort of thing as well?
No, she writes Ezzy.
She gives Ezzy an allowance.
You're married. You know the deal. I mean, you know the answer to that.
I know. It doesn't mean I don't want to put you on the spot, though, to talk about it because it's entertaining for me.
We'll talk about banking off air, Drew.
Okay. Anyways, the Jets and the Lightning. A week ago at this time, it seemed like this was going to be a battle between the two best teams in the NHL. Jets obviously lost the last two games. The Lightning, they haven't missed a beat. They've won three in a row. It's going to be a very difficult test for the Winnipeg Jets tonight in Tampa against the Lightning team that's 12-2-1 on home ice this season. They have the best goal differential in the NHL, plus 35.
Not even close.
Yeah, it's not even close.
Kings have 20, plus 28, I think, and other than that, everybody else is in the teens.
Yeah, the Jets are up there.
The Jets have a good, plus 17, which is certainly respectable, but the just goes to show you how good the Lightning have been this year. Your attention to detail when you play the Tampa Bay Lightning has to be impeccable because you cannot play with any sort of lapse in judgment, any sort of hiccups to your game and expect to win in Tampa tonight.
Yeah, and, you know, I have to be honest with you guys. I mean, I'm not that surprised at all that the Tampa Bay Lightning are where they're at. People forget 2 years ago, this team almost won the Stanley Cup. If it wasn't for, you know, the perennial powerhouse Chicago Blackhawks, they would have won their second Stanley Cup in team history, right? And, you know, last year, obviously the injury to Steven Stamkos was devastating, but yeah. I mean, this year, Stamkos has picked up where he left off a couple of years back, and you're right, Drew. I mean, there is no room for error against this team. They're a good offensive team. They're a good defensive team. They have an amazing power play, top-ranked power play in the NHL. Mm-hmm. They have a great penalty kill. I believe it's ranked top 10 in the NHL.
Eighth in penalty kill right. percentage, 82.41%.
Right. So, I mean, there aren't very many weaknesses. Andre Vasilevsky was the big question mark coming into the year just because he hadn't played more than 50 games. I believe he played 50, if I'm not mistaken, last year, splitting time with Ben Bishop, playing the majority of games. But needless to say, he was a bit of a question mark because he wasn't the undisputed number one goaltender yeah. in previous years. And, of course, he's relatively young still in his early 20s. But Andre Vasilevsky has been great. And, you know, Mikhail Sergachev has been an amazing addition to this team. And I don't think, guys, enough people are talking about how good of a year he's having, rookie year that he's having this year. A lot of talk has centered around Charlie McAvoy with the Boston Bruins, and he's having a sensational year as well. But for me, Mikhail Sergachev, I mean, he's almost taken some of that offense away from Victor Hedman. Victor Hedman's numbers are a little bit down, and I would know that because I took him in my hockey pool.
Naturally.
But when you're talking about, you know, the firepower that they can send out, we've talked about this before, guys. Andre Palat, Braden Point, I mean, that's an excellent second line. And then you're able to put a guy like Chris Kunitz on your fourth line. Right now, the third line is Alex Killorn, Yanni Gourde, and Courtney Connacher. I mean, sometimes this team plays with seven defensemen. And there aren't many teams in the NHL that play seven defensemen. Tampa Bay is one of them. So up and down the lineup, Dave, this team can hurt you. That top line can hurt you. The second line can hurt you. And, you know, they have guys like Victor Hedman and Mikhail Sergachev that could score from the back end. And they don't give up a lot with Andre Vasilevsky. His numbers have been excellent this year. So this is probably the best team the Jets are going to play this year.
And I would agree with you in your assessment, Ez, and I think probably the biggest key for Winnipeg today, if you want to win the game, is staying out of the penalty box. I mean, this is a team in Tampa that has just, I mean, like Winnipeg does, has lethal weapons on that power play opportunity, mm-hmm. or power play units. And so I think you just can't afford to be undisciplined. You have to, you know, we saw it in Florida a little bit, and also in Detroit, where you just can't afford to take, you know, penalties where you're very casual with your stick and lazy. You just got to be, it's not something Winnipeg's gotten away from that, and they've been more disciplined. They've gone a little bit away from that of late, and so they need to get back to it. And really, that's been a secret to the success, is just staying out of the penalty box, trying to get their power play jump started a little bit. But again, knowing that you're up against a very good Tampa team, is that you just have to play a tight game. You have to keep the gap on this team very tight, simply because of the power that they have in their units. And again, take advantage of your opportunities. And if you do that, and you have a chance to beat a very good Tampa team. And you know, look, we talked about Detroit getting pumped by
Montreal
10-1, and then wanting to have a good game against the Jets, and obviously having an extra day off because that game was on Saturday and the Jets played Ottawa on Sunday. The fact is that the Jets now have had time to recover. They've had time to, as you talked about, Drew, watch video on what they did wrong in Florida. They've watched video, obviously, in Detroit as well. The fact is that this team has to come out and have a much better effort, because, sure, three games in this part of the season, you know, game 30 of the season isn't going to determine where you finish in the finals, or ultimately in the standings, I should say. But at the same time, you really can't afford to have a lapse. You need to have a really strong game against one of the top teams. And as Drew said, 12-2-1, one of the best teams in their home rink.
You know, there's a lot of benchmark games on the calendar in this month.
You
know,
games that you circle.
Yeah, the calendar that I circle, exactly right. You know, there's a lot of benchmark games against what I will describe as upper echelon teams for the Jets. They have this one against Tampa tonight. They have the home and home against the Blues coming up. I believe is that next week or
next week,
and next Saturday, Sunday, that home and home against the Blues. They have games against Nashville. They have two games against the Islanders, who are a very good team. These are the kind of games where you're playing against the upper echelon competition, and you want to see how you can match up against the best that the NHL has to offer. And so, sure, the Jets maybe took their competition a little too lightly earlier in the week against Detroit and against Miami and against Florida. That has to end tonight. You have to, you're, like I said, from the outside of this segment, your attention to detail must be perfect against the Lightning tonight.
Yeah, and speaking of benchmark games, Drew, I think in October you had the two games against Columbus and the two games against Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. The Jets obviously had the disappointing loss at home against Columbus, but then they went on the road back-to-back and got two of a possible 4 points and then absolutely hammered the Pittsburgh Penguins. So I think those were benchmark games as well, but... You know, benchmark games aside, they have to win this game and get the 2 points. You don't want to come back to Winnipeg having lost three games in a row on the road, because now you've let other teams get back into it. Chicago won last night. Minnesota won last night. So the gap is closing. And, you know, the Jets are still third place here in the Western Conference, second in the Central. But you don't want teams to make up those points, right? You'd rather stay 5, 6, 7 points up on these teams. So, you know.
Make the teams that are out of the playoff picture think about the wild card teams and not the division. Teams.
Right, because if the Jets keep sliding, they could end up being one of those wild card teams. If two losses turns into four or five losses.
This would be five in a row. If they lose tonight, there would be five losses in a row on the road, which would certainly begin to develop a narrative regarding their performance on the road.
Right, and you know, even though I don't think the December schedule is hard in the sense that there are only one set of back-to-back games.
Against an opponent who's also back-to-back, being the Blues.
Right, but you've got Vancouver is playing pretty well. Bo Horvat's injured, so, you know, the Canucks are reeling a little bit. But then you've got Chicago on Wednesday. You've got, as you mentioned, Drew, Thursday, St. Louis back-to-back on the weekend.
Yeah. Nashville.
And then you've got Nashville next week. You've got the Oilers a couple times. You've got the Islanders a couple times. So,
Even though the Oilers are struggling, there's still Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl.
Right, and so, you know, the Jets have to right the ship. It's not a must-win game, because the Jets, as we mentioned, I mean...
They've
banked some points, but you definitely... You want to get a clean win here.
And you want, yes, you do. You want to come home at least feeling good about yourself before you play the three in a row at home next week, starting Monday, against the Canucks. When we come back, Brian Engblom is going to join us. We'll talk more about the Lightning. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.